Welcome! This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
My guest in the Care in Action podcast today is a very dear colleague of mine. It is Sophia Sprechmann. Welcome, Sophia. And she's the Secretary General of Care International. And as always, I provide the listeners with a very short introduction of our guest. So, as mentioned, Sophia Sprechmann is the Secretary General of Care International with 25 years of experience of working with care in different positions. Sophia spearheaded CARE's first program strategy and was integral to placing gender equality at the very heart of CARE's worldwide work. Sophia, originally from Uruguay, now lives in Quito, the capital of Ecuador. A very warm welcome to Vienna, Sophia.
Thank you so much. I'm really pleased to be here.
There is a lot going on at the moment in our world. And you, as the Secretary General of a worldwide global confederation like CARE International, and maybe our listeners are not so much aware about the structure of CARE. So CARE Austria represents one of the numerous members around the globe. And we are organized in a global confederation and don't think that only countries like Austria, France or the UK are part of the confederation. It's really a truly global confederation with members like CARE India, CARE Indonesia, CARE Thailand, CARE Egypt, CARE Morocco. So a lot of different members. And this is where I want to start our conversation. A global confederation, to hold it under one umbrella, would you say this is a challenge and why?
Thank you, Andrea. It is definitely a challenge because it's a large confederation of 21 members. When I joined CARE, actually in 94 in Cambodia, that was my first job with CARE, there were 10 members of CARE International. Now we are 21 members. It's become, therefore, more than twice of the size and more diverse members, members, as you just mentioned, from all over the world. And of course, having one strategy and one impact vision for such a large confederation with many diverse voices, with many perspectives, it's always easier when you have a few people around the table to decide, to make decisions. But I would say it's much richer when you have more diverse voices and also much more contextually appropriate. I also believe that what is very exciting about CARE being a global player is that, we are nourished by those perspectives, but also we are seen as a global player. And that matters enormously in contexts, let's say, like Afghanistan. If you're seen as a U.S. NGO, or if you are a U.S. NGO, or in other countries, if you're seen as a French NGO, it is harder also to do the work. It may come with security risks. So we are truly a global confederation, of which, of course, CARE Austria is a critical member. And it comes also with that flavor of being multi-perspective, multi-idea, and also multi-understanding and deep understanding. We have a total of 12,500 staff all across the world. The vast majority of them are from the countries in which we seek impact, the vast majority. So people from Mali in Mali, people from Peru in Peru, people. And that also matters enormously because in the more than 100 countries in which we have operations, people know their context and they're also part of the confederation's decision making by having members in many parts of the world.
And we are a global part of the labor market. This is also worth mentioning because many global NGOs provide a lot of jobs in all countries, including Austria.
That is very, very important. Jobs and connection and expertise, people who can also understand other contexts. So it's the jobs, but also people that are exposed to different worldviews. And that also, of course, gives a different flavor to the interactions we may have. These are people that are used to work at community level, at national level, but also reach out to global partners and colleagues from elsewhere. And I think that nourishes truly the coming together in the world, in this world that is so fragmented, the opportunity of having more people that want to build bridges between countries and be truly in solidarity with each other is, I think, a really important contribution.
So one could say that the Confederation is like the frame for our global network. This is the place where we all come together, where we build our mutual trust and understanding, and where we also create the tools for having enormous impact worldwide, right?
Exactly, and where also we learn from each other the best any part of care has to offer. And we see that very live in care. For example, we have some members that have deep humanitarian experience, others that are more skilled in women's economic justice, others that may have greater expertise in sexual and reproductive health and rights. And the beauty of a confederation is that we are not all the same, but we offer to the rest the best each and every part of care has to offer. And that in itself, I mean, I feel personally, I have been so nourished by my actually 28 years in care, because the learning I have had in a very large and diverse confederation with many expertise, perspectives, I would never have been able to obtain it, was it not from my, I've been lucky to visit about 70 countries in which care has operations in these 28 years. And what I have learned from different perspectives, I would never have learned was it not for the fact of all these very different and complementary presences.
Mm-hmm. You already mentioned it. You mentioned our largest and our founding member, which is CARE US. And it is more than 75 years that CARE was founded by people who wanted to help war-torn Europe at that time. And in spite of the fact that we still talk and use the icon of the CARE package, we were quite convinced that war after the Balkan Wars in Europe is a thing of the past. And now the war is back in Europe, very strong, very destroying and really unspeakable. And it is the dominating topic of our time. But there are lots of other dominating topics. And this is on top of what we already had to deal with. So we have the pandemic. We see hunger was at the forefront again due to the pandemic already. And now it's even worse with the ongoing war in Ukraine. We have a lot of chronic conflicts. That means that they are long-lasting conflicts. Our listeners will be aware of the crisis, the war in Syria, in Yemen, the Gaza conflict, northern Iraq. There are so many places in the world, Afghanistan, Venezuela. It's endless, the list, and it's still growing. And on top of all that, the war in the 76th year of CARE is back in Europe. So if one is not super optimistic, this is like a slap in the face after so many years working in the humanitarian sector, no?
I must say it's actually quite difficult, because when I started this line of work in 94, it was a moment where we thought that, you know, the walls were falling, the world was coming together. And actually for all of these years, until 2 years ago, we've seen mainly progress. Of course, you have mentioned many hotspots in the world, but all in all, but for example, a continent like Latin America, where I'm also from, the indicators are sliding back to what they were when I started my work. So it does feel like nearly 30 years have evaporated in a split second. It does feel like when you look at maternal health, child mortality, economic indicators, we are kind of back where we were. And, you know, at the same time, we must, of course, continue working and have hope. It's not easy to find that motivation when you see, and let alone, as you say now, with the war in Europe, because that is certainly something we were not expecting nor saw coming. It is hard. At the same time, it's sometimes in some of the deepest crisis where I have seen signs of hope and opportunity for change. Let me give you a quick example. When I traveled to Nigeria, and I traveled to a part of Nigeria dominated by Boko Haram, where people were truly fleeing their homes. And I went to a refugee camp in a helicopter because it was all surrounded by Boko Haram. I saw women lining up in front of a tent for family planning. And in times of peace, this is a very conservative society where women at age 25 usually have already 5-6 children and would never use family planning. And in that context, it was even publicly visible. They were all lining up what usually would be even hidden from their husbands on, and let alone from the community. And in that situation of migrating, also husbands realized that it was better to be on the move with 2 children and not with 6. So what I want to say, it's sometimes in the deepest crisis where there is a crack in the system. And once we, you know, women get empowered and are able to control, for example, how many children they want, there's rarely reversal. Once that women find their voice, the empowerment of their own decisions. So in every crisis, a big crack in a system is also sometimes an opportunity. We have to see it that way. It's awful. But if we don't see the opportunity for a better world, no matter where we find ourselves, it's hard to keep walking. So even in this really tragic situation, we must continue supporting those that need us the most. But more than that, we must already dream with an even brighter future, because it's very, very easy to get otherwise stuck in the difficulties.
That's also the key message for the thousands of people that are supporting the work of CARE. Never, I always say, hope is not enough. Never lose your intention to do good and to support those people in need around the globe. This is really the key message. CARE certainly is not getting tired of what we are doing. No way. But on the other side, we have to face numerous areas of conflict, of drought, of war, of climate impact. And we have to deal with a variety of challenges. And we have to adapt our approaches. And we have to rely much more on global cooperation to achieve impact. And this is, I would say, this is the future of CARE, to cooperate much more than we did in the past, to enable all the stakeholders to really provide impact where it is needed. And it's not us who is providing the impact. People impacted know best what they need and where they want to go in their lives.
I couldn't agree more with you, Andrea, because it's actually, well, and because of what we're seeing in the world, COVID and war and so many crises, also a larger percentage of our work is now humanitarian response, because the need is so immense. As you say, hunger looming in biblical proportions. There's actually 12 countries right now at the verge of famine. Famine, a word we thought would be non-existent right now. And we're talking about famine. And therefore, we need much more hands on deck. And that includes COVID. Because of COVID also, we have not been able to travel around the world, meaning that not only more responsibility, but more authority has been given to our local partners, to people all around the world that are doing this kind of work. And that's also quite inspiring. Also, many more women-led organizations that have had to shift their focus in order to work on humanitarian response. So there's also more people who genuinely want to do this work, many more organizations. And that is quite exciting because I'm also seeing more global solidarity. And global solidarity matters now more than ever, more than ever. It is, you know, only when we unite around causes of the kind, of these kind, that we can make a difference.
And find solutions, because most of the challenges cannot be solved by one country or one region, in spite of the fact that many of our politicians pretend that this might be possible. Let's talk a little bit about the climate crisis, which is always there, which has built up over the last 30 years, let's put it like that. And some of the countries try to do something, some continents try to do a bit more. Do you fear that we will see a big backlash on the impact of climate crisis now, having to deal with COVID and so many wars?
I think there's a true danger because we all have, we all as human beings deal, we are a bit reactive in nature and we deal with what is more the most imminent threat. That's what we do. And you know, if COVID was harsh, climate will even be harsher. But we often see kind of the most immediate, the most short term, what is in the news. And I am worried because, you know, this is probably just, you know, a preparedness for what is coming our way when really true climate disasters hit. So therefore, you know, we really must work on avoiding it as much as we can. And that's why at CARE, this is very much also a focus of our work. We work, of course, on gender equality, on the leadership of women and girls, also in climate change, because they are also the ones that are hardest hit in the poorest country. And this is kind of the dilemma or the contradiction. Those that are least responsible of climate change, of generating it, are the most impacted. And women in the global south, in the poorest countries, are the most impacted. But they're also the backbone of the potential recovery and action. And therefore, their actions are so critical. Their voice in these talks, also in the global climate talks, is essential in influencing their own governments, in really describing, you know, how this will impact their lives and in their own farming practices and resilience, for example, for many farmers in sub-Saharan Africa. What do they need to do in order to adapt to climate change, which will be a reality? So it's better to be prepared than not and know how to, for example, plant more climate resilient crops and how to manage water in different ways because there will be less. So all of that is also therefore part of our work and an essential part of our work. But of course, we cannot and must not forget about the responsibilities that lie in the richer countries, both in supporting women, but also in making their own transition and energy transition and consumption. And consumption, this matters hugely because how we live and the way we behave influences enormously the world we are creating today for tomorrow's.
What I really think is important as the representative of a European CI member is that we should not pretend that all these issues are only focused on women and girls and societies of the so-called Southern Hemisphere. I would like to mention at this stage that in Austria, one of the, I think it's the fifth richest country in the world, women are the losers of the COVID crisis. And we know that the statistics, and this is not only true for Austria, this applies also to other European countries, for non-paid care work really impacts the lives and the economic lives of women and girls massively, and of course also of men and boys. So I think it is very important to mention that in spite of the fact that we focus on women and girls in all the social work that we are doing and all the humanitarian work that we are doing, that also CARE is understanding development as a holistic approach. And the fact that we focus on women and girls does not mean, of course, that men and boys are not included in our work, be it humanitarian, be it social work or development work. And many things, and I think this is the beauty of the SDGs, which is not so well known, especially in the richer countries, if you want to call them like that, that the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals, also apply, they apply to everybody, not only to the so-called South or North. And you see that I have a deep problem with the concept of categorizing, but somehow we have to name what we mean. So in a country like Austria, I don't know about Ecuador, where you are living, but the SDGs are not a big topic, to be honest. Outside the crowd that is dealing professionally with it, they are simply not known. And this would be key for a holistic approach to development to tackle all the problems that we mentioned before. So is it different in Latin America?
No, unfortunately not. But these goals are absolutely critical, as you say, because we now have global goals that the international community put together that countries subscribe to. And as you say, they apply to richer and poorer countries and everything in between. And it is the globe, the goals we have agreed to that to which we want to make progress by 2030. I do think they merit probably sometimes less technical conversations there. We are guilty that why are they not so well known? Because it tend to be kept in little circles of people that talk about them all the time. So I think we must make them more popular, you know, more popular and generally communicate about them in a much more invigorating way. Because it's exciting that the world has set very clear targets for 2030 around eradicating hunger, eradicating extreme poverty. That's truly a fantastic commitment around which we work. And at CARE, we work in many of these SDGs, you know, of course, on hunger, on poverty, on water, on gender equality, on health. All of this matters to us because although there are 17 goals, if we achieve one and not the other, the world will not be connected. A better place. It's all connected. Absolutely. It's really all connected.
And you already mentioned that, and when we talked a lot about it, women and girls, they are so important in general. And we have this World Women Day, and also inside CARE, it is a big thing somehow. And the older I get, I have to confess, the more critical I see World Women's Day. Because why in 2022 we are not there yet, that women's rights are human rights, no need to talk extra about it, and they should be in place 364 days of a year globally and not only on World Women's Day. How do you feel about that?
It's a good point you're making. They are human rights. It's a good reminder, but we should have it more than once a year, that precisely that inequality still exists. In fact, the pandemic in that regard, before the pandemic, in order to get equality between women and men in all areas of life, we were 90 years away. Now we are 136 years away. It has been delayed yet by another generation. Why? Because in many parts of the world, women are in the lowest paid jobs, the informal jobs like street vendors that were mostly hit by the pandemic because they didn't have any safety net. And of course, what you already mentioned, women doing the majority of work at home, they were already doing on average two to three hours more globally of work, domestic work, unpaid domestic work at home. And that has increased a further 30% to 40% during the pandemic, which means this is less time that women can get focused on their own education, on their own rest, on their own development, because with children at home, much of that work has been absorbed by women. But the point, so we are seeing a reversal on gender equality. And at the same time, what you say is so, so critical. Because without that, if women would be fully part of the economy, it would unlock trillions of dollars, you know, also in growth. in what they contribute to the economy. So it's both, you know, it's both. We must do this for values, from a values perspective, because we want equality.
Also for economic.
But also for economic, you know, reasons. It matters on every front. And without it, it's simply not there yet. We must really work harder. And now, more than ever, as mentioned, women were the hardest hit by COVID. And the reversal we've seen in gender equality, they're also the backbone, truly the backbone of the recovery, if they engage, if they contribute. So a long way to go, but we need a reminder of it every day of our lives. And that's why we have made it a focus at CARE. However, that doesn't mean, as you said, that we only work with women, because, for example, it's very obvious, in order to get more equality at home on sharing the domestic work burden, you need to engage men and boys. It is not, I mean, that's very obvious. If men and boys need to contribute more to the domestic work as well, in order to free up the time of women for their own education, their own advancement. And that's true for everything. You know, we cannot only overcome gender inequality by working with women and girls. We must engage with boys and with men. And that's absolutely essential.
And also we want to engage with boys and
we
men.
We do.
You have sons, we all have husbands at home.
Yeah.
So we are part of the discussion, yeah. And we know how difficult it is. And really, let me mention it again. This is also a top topic in Europe. And the more dire the time becomes, the bigger this topic gets.
And in the global south, I mean, we've seen things like, for example, child marriage skyrocketing, because at times of crisis, you know, marrying off a girl earlier means one person less to feed at home. We've seen many girls age 13, 14, 15 dropping out from school in
and
this
never
situation.
Never going back.
Never going back.
Yeah.
So the reversal of what that means, not only for their own lives, but the health of their children, the education of their children, if the own mother cannot read and hasn't completed education. I mean, this is the danger. It's spiraling down, and we have to urgently act to avoid that.
So to support CARE, to urgently act and to really have an impact, we all need donations. Is this something that you are optimistic about, that the global approach in receiving donations, also this part becomes more global than it is? Because at the moment, this is not a secret, that the EU is the biggest donor, the United States a very big donor, other big donors, but donations and financing international cooperation in development and in emergency is more a thing of the so-called global north. And also the private donations, in spite of the fact that there are many religious movements who encouraged their followers to donate and everything, but donations in the classical sense that we see related to the care package, they come mainly from richer countries. So do you anticipate that this might change also in the next years?
I already see some changes, and that's very encouraging. It is true that, you know, the world, when I started this line of work, was much more divided between global north, rich, and global south. But now we see billionaires in India, in Brazil, in so many other parts of the world that also have, of course, the ability to donate. We see a very large diasporas that learn something else in terms of a giving culture, which is more prevalent in Europe, in the US, in Canada than in Brazil, the giving culture. But the diaspora also helps to bring that message home. So in that more interconnected world, that is actually shifting. And of course, we cannot forget the digital means. Mm-hmm. Now we all see it in our Facebook feeds, in our Twitter feeds. We get messages to donate to causes that are very far from our own context. So the knowledge and the understanding of much more interconnected world and what happens in Russia or in Ukraine may impact me at home as well, but many kilometers away. You know, farmers, for example, that grow roses, bananas, cacao, chocolate that cannot be exported to Russia will also be affected. So that notion, and therefore the need to all contribute, because it's not only in the interest of somebody far away, but our own interest. I think that notion is much more alive, especially in young people that are much more digital and they see a digital feed and they might live in South Korea, they might live in Brazil, but they care about what that can do not only to the world and the future of the world, but to their own lives as well. So in that sense, things are already shifting.
This is really a very good final word, but the final word will be, what do you envision for the next 2 or 3 years? Do you have a wish?
I have many wishes.
Not for the distant future.
Yeah, I have many wishes. I think the next few years will be tough. There is no way around it. And therefore, being closely knitted together and working even more hand in hand becomes even more important. I think this is all a wake-up call for the need to support each other, to be in solidarity with each other, and that, again, what happens far away matters to me at home too. So my wish is that, and the pandemic that really has impacted globally has truly helped in that regard, to understand also some of the deep injustices about vaccine distribution, for example, and the need for justice, because we are all one humankind and one humanity, and showing to each other support and respect and solidarity is critical if we want to survive in this planet and have a healthy planet, which is, of course, what we all wish for, I hope. So, yes, I mean, there's many wishes. And of course, I'm just very humbled and very grateful to be able to work for an organization like CARE that puts that front and center in its vision and mission. And I just feel very grateful that we all can contribute to that better world.
Yeah, so do I. This is one of the main motivators, I have to say, to do this challenging work in these challenging times. When we talk to each other, a picture came up, which is like CARE is providing like a social safety net, and we try to spread it worldwide. And to do that, we really need the help of every single listener to this podcast. You can be convinced that you matter, your donation matters, and that is needed much more than ever, especially in these times. So thank you, Sophia, for visiting us in Vienna. Thank you for this conversation. And until the next time, this was the podcast of CARE Austria.
Thank you, Andrea.